should have seen just what was there and not some holy light. It crawled beneath my veins and now I don't care, I had no luck. I don't miss it all that much. There's just so many things that I...
Good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, you know the drill. SteveBick.com. If you're listening that way, etc., etc. I'm going to say something funny. I think because, like Andy says, nobody amuses me more than me. But when I say funny, it's not funny. Ha ha! It's funny. Interesting. If after saying for weeks how we would not want to have a Breeders' Cup at Saratoga, you know, which is this ridiculous pie in the sky dream scenario that you hear people float, I can tell you the last 3 days, if it happened to somehow fall in this range, it would have been pretty nice. It's got to be 75 degrees. In fact, I was looking around just now to see if there's some way to cool off my office. There's no breeze either. I can't even sort of vent the windows across. So I'm going to have to schwitz it up here for 3 hours, I guess. It's all right. I can do it. If I can sit outside at Saratoga in 95 degree temperatures and do the show, we can certainly, right? We can certainly do it for here. But I'm sort of taken aback. We were ticketed toward, you know, fall and winter, and then all of a sudden it's like somebody threw a switch. The old Indian summer. Do you remember? Why I remember this, I cannot tell you. Do you remember a Peanuts? Yeah, there was actually a sweet spot, a certain period of time where Peanuts was actually funny, and it was really actually enjoyable. In fact, you remember as kids, we'd get those little Peanuts like signet size books and we trade them back and forth. And actually, it's funny. Another funny thing. What was I watching? Remember the little big books? I'm sure our kids and our grandkids have no idea what that is. But remember those little big books? And they were basically comic books or cereal books, pulp cereal type stuff, and they were this, you know, they were what, like 5 by 4 inches by 3 inches, maybe? A little bigger than that. And we used to trade them back and forth, and sometimes they'd be a serialization of a novel, or, you know, like Last of the Mohicans and so forth, but most times, you know, it was Dick Tracy, whatever. But there was a time where Peanuts was funny, and there's one that I remember with Lucy where she's explaining Indian Summer and floating a concept that the Indians were using it to trick the settlers. That I guess this was before, you know, before we got, you know, aware of this, but where she says to, I think she says to Linus, the Indians used it to trick the settlers before it was going to snow. I don't know. At the time, it was funny as a kid. I don't know why it stays in my head. There's certain things like that that just you can't even force them out of your head. Well, speaking of which, I mean, how about Andy yesterday, which he's done for, I mean, you know, close to 2 decades on the show, where a certain date or a certain, you know, situation. Here we were talking about Keeneland and the turf, and you know, that period where they would never take races off the turf, essentially, and that turns into lore winning, and he remembers a sequence, you know, he's got that kind of, you know, I don't think he would identify it as a photographic memory, right? It's kind of a catalog, yeah, right? It's kind of more of a card catalog memory. That at least mine is. I can tell you, is that way. You know, where I certainly don't have what I would, yeah, not even close to a photographic memory. I'd call it a, yeah, just sort of certain recall, not total recall. But certain things just stick in your head, you know, the baseball stats, right, from when we were growing up, and the certain records. I mean, most of them have been eclipsed by now. And you know what's funny? You couldn't, I guarantee, you know, with all the sports fans listening, you know, those of us that grew up, you know, having memorized certain stats, and certain record numbers. I mean, obviously Babe Ruth, you know, 714 in particular, right? I mean, that just was such a, you know, such a sacrosanct, seemingly, number, right? Gehrig, 2130, right? 2,130. Consecutive games played, and they just, you know, those numbers just they just locked into your brain. And the funny thing is, I would say this is more people my age, sports fans. I don't know where Ripken ended. Could not tell you the number, the number that Ripken ended at. Can't have that same institutionalized collective memory that Gehrig's record did. I always maintain that Ripken would have been, to my way of thinking, Ripken would have been better served getting to 2130 and breaking his own and stopping and tying Gehrig. That would have immortalized Ripken even more than to me. That was my, I mean, what was the point of playing past Gehrig's record? You know, my thought. So I no idea how we went in this direction. By the way, thanks to everybody. Got a lot of great. Everybody really enjoyed the. I guess I would, you know, I'd call them two special kind of special guests. First, Jim Helzer, which I was delighted to have a chance to meet Jim Helzer and have him on. And then the fun with Dan Delgado. And, you know, any opportunity to merge movies with horse racing, that just, you know, it's irresistible. So people really enjoyed it, and I'm delighted that there's so many people who are actually, seems like quite a few of you already had started listening, like I did. And then, you know, after I got familiar with what was going on, I said, I got to get this guy on. This is too great. This is too cool. So you know, the impetus, the idea that somebody would do this. And you know, once you listen to that first episode with the Australian film critic, it's going to open you to, I think, you know, to a whole world of this kind of treatment. I mean, it seems so, I mean, micro. How would you call it? You know, micro examination. The minute by, I haven't listened to one of those minute by minute ones yet, but I happen to love All the President's Men, so that might be the first one that I take in. I'm going to say something funny about this too. Tina and I watch plenty, and I'm sure that, you know, a lot of you partake in the binge watching, you know, the serial watching of things. I had not really. I subscribed to like four or five podcasts, including really the granddaddy in a lot of ways, Mark Maron, his WTF. I think that was the first podcast I ever became aware of, actually, was Mark Maron. And it was somewhat, I got a, you know, an odd connection, because Maron, you know, I got very friendly with Jimbo at Comedy Works in Montreal. And I used to cater, you know, the New Year's party and the Christmas party and that kind of thing. And a lot of times Jimbo would send me to the airport out to Dorval to with paperwork for the incoming comic, and I'd go pick them up and take them to their hotel and stuff, and had a lot of fun. Ray Romano, Dane Cook, and Mark Maron, and he was a little bit known, you know, more for his stand up. I think he had what, short attention span theater. Right, was, I think at that time, that was Maron's claim to fame. He came and did a weekend at Comedy Works. I thought he was one of the funniest, most interesting comics. There were things that he did, riffs that he did. I remember being in the back of the room, and I literally was the only person that laughed. And I might have been, you know, I might have had a buzz. But I just remember that he, even his approach to payoffs was funny. And so I got to know him a little bit. And he came up at least twice that I remember. So anyway, his WTF, you know, where it was a podcast that he started in his garage and you know, has become, I mean, legendary. It's hundreds and hundreds of interviews where he, I mean, all kinds of Hollywood, I mean, musicians and actors, actresses, production, countless, obviously other comedians. So that was really the first podcast I ever really, you know, knew that the podcast. But the problem is, you know, first of all, I'm doing 3 hours of live radio myself, 5 days a week. Weekends are tough because you're, you know, you're tied on to watching racing. We're watching racing, you know, a lot of days in the afternoons. And then, you know, I'm married, have a wife. So it, the opportunity to listen, it to fit it in and, you know, you to give it your attention. And I'm not somebody, I don't know how everybody feels about this. You could respond on Twitter, actually. That'd be interesting to see what people say. I'm sure there's people that listen to a show, episodes, while doing other things, you know, reading other things or doing some whatever, you know, but it's different than music. I can't do it. If I'm going to listen to something like that, I got to listen. I'm not somebody that can split my concentration. And I mean, I can, you know, I'm doing the, you know, for those that wonder, I love when I get angry emails or you know, emails chiding me for, you know, for certain miscues that happen during the course of a show. Particularly this would happen with Jay Pridman, where you know, I'm doing more than one thing, listening to the guest, and I'm letting Casey know he's got to, you know, Case up is next, or I'm sending him, you know, he's sending me a note, sending him a phone number, whatever. There isn't a team of 17 people that are churning out that are churning out this production, and we don't tape it and edit, so. You know, there's a couple of things going on at once, very often. But when it comes to listening to something like that, you know, I wanted to make sure to I hadn't heard the Dave Hill piece. I wanted to make sure to hear Dave's visit with Dan Delgado. I wanted to make sure to hear it before yesterday's show. So I listened to the first three episodes, and then listened yesterday morning before the show to Dave Hill's because I wanted to make sure I heard everything Dave had talked about. So I couldn't do other things. I couldn't handicap or whatever. So anyway, I'm not sure how we arrived. I guess because I want to thank Dan again for being so generous with his time and everybody for their, you know, their very nice response to his visit. So I love movies, and I actually heard Jay Hovde wrote me a note, and Hovde said he's got a series coming up in Thoroughbred Racing Commentary, thoroughbredracing.com, and that's all he said. He just said, you're going to love, we were, you know, talking about movies. And he said, you're going to love the series that I'm working on. So that was like a, you know, that was like a cliffhanger type. So I'm not sure what, but I'm guessing it has something, you know, to do with film. Case, let's get Dick Powell. I've managed to blow the first 15 minutes here just yapping away. We'll probably look at the sale results with Sid at the top of hour two, and there's actually something very interesting that I landed on this morning while I was handicapping. I wasn't listening to a podcast. While handicapping tomorrow's sequence at Aqueduct, the carryover, that maiden sixth race has got a lot of interesting things going on, and there's a couple of firsters that have very interesting pedigrees, most notably one from the Bromans. And I think Sid's going to riff on that a little. It's the family of Auntie Spend and seeking the auntie. And it occurred to me, I mean, Chet Broman has had as, you know, great an influence you know, certainly beyond regionally. It's not confined. I mean, yes, the New York bred program, and he's brought, you know, tremendous, you know, Kentucky sire strength to New York in his program. you know, anti-spend, though, is the, you know, the foundation mare, and then seeking the anti. There is, I mean, this horse that's running tomorrow for John Kimmel, and Kimmel trained that whole sequence, the tail female line. The name is Mariachi, and it's a McLean's Music, out of an unraced daughter of Seeking the Ante, whose name was Ante Up My Friend. She never made the races. But all of her sisters, it is unbelievable. And they literally all have current stars and or potential stars on the racetrack right now at the same time. The entire set of daughters out of Seeking the Ante. Risk a Chance, Barbie on a Budget, G-Note, and now this mare, Ante Up My Friend, has this baby. It was remarkable. I said to Sid, you got to talk about this. G-Note has got Hijazi, the $3.5 million Amr Zidane, Gary Young colt. It was grade one, multiple grade one placed now. Winless, but multiple grade one placed. That Barbie on a Budget has got Fingal's Cave that, was that Dave Donk? Or Dave Donk, I think. And then there's Risk a Chance. She's the dam of Un Ojo, the one-eyed New York-bred Rebel winner. These are all sisters of this dam, and they're all out of Seeking the Ante. It's just amazing. And of course, Antispend, you know, her dam also got Friends Lake, who of course, and Mig, by the way, Mig rode like all of these. And oh, by the way, let's pause there for a second. Dick Powell's with us. Let's pause to congratulate the entire Migliori family. Joe Migliori and wife, and now I'm going to forget her name, which is awful. But after a 24-hour ordeal, she delivered a daughter yesterday. And so congratulations to Richie and Mel. And glad it seems everything's healthy, and congratulations are in order. And, of course, Joe off on his own bloodstock business, and also, you know, doing jock agenting work as well. Pretty exciting. So I wanted to slip that in since Mig's name came up in association with this this first-time starter. There's also a second-time starter in here for Kelly Breen and Screen Door Stables. This is a Belinsky-bred Union Rags who's got sibling power and was beaten a pole in his debut, Screen Door, the three. I think both of those horses are interesting with the obvious players, the obvious horse. Boy, Schausberg is going to go out with a blaze of glory, it seems, here at the end of his training career, because he's got the favorite, Don't Lose Cruz, from the outside for Clear Stars and Miter Box. And this is an Always Dreaming gelding that was very good upon debut. Got beat by Canarsie, though. The Canarsie kid. Don't Lose Cruz will be the favorite. And I think Asmussen's Inspector, which is a My Racehorse, Jeff Bloom, flatter colt, making a second start. Those are going to be the two favorites. I think you got to use those two with these two longer prices. That first, I think this firster is very live, Mariachi. So, anyway, I'm off in seven directions, Dick. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Lovely fall weather here. Almost 70 degrees. Crazy.
Well, that's what I started the show with this. I mean, it. We were tiptoeing toward, you know, 40s late fall weather, and the next thing you know, it's yesterday I went out of the house wearing a quilty vest, as much for fashion as for warmth. And I said, what am I doing? It's 75 degrees. I couldn't believe what was going on.
And it's been warm overnight because my puppy just got spayed. And she has, you know, she has to cone and she has to be walked. She can't be loose. She has to make sure it doesn't burst the stitches or anything. So I had her out at 2 in the morning the other night, and it was, like, soggy and warm and just crazy, insane weather. So.
Meanwhile, they say it's cold. I guess cold and damp in Kentucky. Everybody's already. I've never seen people so, you know, so caught up with weather concerns. It's like, what's going to happen? The Breeders' just relax. Keeneland. I remember in 2015, everybody was all a tither because it was cold and rainy for 4 days, and then Breeders' Cup Friday rolled around. It was gorgeous the next 2 days. So relax.
Well, and they had gone over 3 weeks without any rain.
Right.
So it's been super dry. I don't know why, but the main track every day, speed, 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 speed. So. We'll see if that continues, but we all obsess, and if there's nothing to obsess over, we'll find something to obsess over.
Well, we'll let me just mention every Sid, of course, next hour, and Seth later. We're supposed to talk to Ed Martin, and it was too early this morning to text Ed, so I'm going to wait another little bit to confirm that Ed is going to join us. I wanted him to explain what happened with the HISA budget. It got 20 minutes of attention, and then people's attention span is pretty limited. But the topic is not, you know, hasn't been appropriately addressed yet, so hopefully Ed can join us. And actually, Tony Black just texted me. He's working horses this morning. How about that? He said he's out on the track right now, and he's listening. He's got his headphones in his ears, and so he's listening. So Tony, stay upright. Be careful out there. We're at Chatin today.
All weather. Okay.
All weather. Yeah.
What they do is they take this time to work on the Chatin turf course. So not only are we at Chatin for your weather today instead of Happy Valley, but we'll be at Happy Valley on Sunday morning, late Saturday night, for turf racing at Happy Valley. So they give the Chatin turf course some time. They aerate it. They do all the stuff to it to keep it not soft, but they don't want it getting too firm and too hard and too dangerous and things like that. So this is part of the normal maintenance plan. So we're running Chatin, 9 races on the old weather, and so far speed's been pretty good on the old weather. Zach won the 4th race. It was just a riding clinic, carrying 135 pounds. He had the lead. He gave it up in the stretch, and he came back and won. And then the 5th race, he's on the Stalker, Fiery Diamond, and somehow Fiery Diamond noses out the horse inside of him. It was just crazy finish. So they showed the photo, and it was as tight as you expected. So Zach has a natural double going here on the all-weather, which he always rides well. So he's already up to 30 wins, and this is only our 14th race meet. Last race, race 6, the hot apprentice rider that I've been talking about, Angus Chung, he had a nice winner, 10 pounds off, so he's listed at 135. He only has to carry 125, and he won rather easily. He had a nice winner on Sunday. He's not yet allowed to run at Happy Valley. Now, this kind of, under the terms of bringing young riders back from wherever they sent them, Mr. Chung was in South Australia where he won like 70 races, so he has a lot of experience. He's not your typical 10-pound bug boy. But because of the configuration of Happy Valley, you kind of have to prove yourself at the Chateau before you're allowed to ride Happy Valley. So I don't think that's far off, considering how well he's doing at Happy Valley. And then also on Sunday, we had the Premier Bowl handicap, and Lucky Swainus went off at a heavy favorite. I checked the odds earlier in the day, and it was like, wow, he was almost odds on. And carrying on to 24 pounds, Zach Purden looked like he'd make the lead. Well, he did make the lead, but he had to work to do it. And turning for home, here comes Wellington, who was already a grade one stakes winner in sprinting. And carrying 135 pounds in his seasonal debut, Wellington runs down Lucky Swainus, wins the Group 2 Premier Bowl handicap. He did win the Longines Sprint last year, and in fact, it was his only win last year, so now he has a win, and he'll try to duplicate that win in December. But he's in great form, and he's a big horse. He weighs like 1,260 pounds, and he was just motoring through the stretch. Lucky Swainus looked good, but if he was going to beat him, that probably would have been the day to beat him. The other horse that stuck out on Sunday, Steve, was Rise Brethren, son of Lope de Vega. And he won a nice Class 2 going 1,800 meters, 146.37. Very fast time. The Danish Shum, ridden by the red-hot Alexi Bedell. So those are the highlights from Sunday's card. Today, so far, looks nice. Like speed on the all-weather. And we head into the last three.
We'll talk about the pick three here that starts with the Taiho handicap. But, boy, there were some nice prices. I got up at about 4:30 and had it on, and I didn't handicap. I was concentrating on Belmont tomorrow. And, I mean, I just every time I looked up, there was another nice price, including a $60 winner in the second, I think a $30 winner in the third. So it was there were some early fireworks. Then you mentioned Purton, who won a couple in a row, and now we've sort of settled into a more mundane set of results.
Which, you know, we'll take mundane in the pick three. We always want that third horse to be the winner. And do you want me to start now, or?
Yeah, go ahead. We got about 15 minutes to post, and that'll be perfect. Okay. And then we'll fold in some other rip from today's headline conversation.
Okay, race 7, first leg is a class 4, going to go 1650. So this is kind of the metric mile going two turns. Going two turns at Chatin on the all-weather. Post position is important. Not so important going 1,200 meters, but going two turns, it seems to be. So I kind of lean towards mixing out the outside horses. I'm going to go, the favorite is number 6, Yes We Can. He just looks very good. He's coming off a blowout win on October 9th, right back here on October 26th. So Benno Young combined with a winner with Zach Purden already today. The horse just looks super tough. I considered singling him and maybe getting fancy and buying a race later, but with big fields, it's hard to buy races. You're going pretty deep into your wallet. So I'm going to go with Yes We Can. Nothing not to like about him other than the price. Second, the other horse I'm going to use, the other two I'm going to use is number 5, Turbo Power. Antoine Hamelin had this one rallying. Very nice. On the all-weather, I think that was its all-weather debut. So I like that first time he tried it, ran very well on it. And then number 1, Infinite Power, is ridden by Angus Chung, so he gets the 10 pounds off. Even though he's the highest-rated horse in here, he's only going to carry 125, which would bring him down to like the 7th-weighted horse in the race. So Infinite Power showed really good speed on the all-weather, and then for some reason just collapsed. I don't know what happened. It was a fast race. I don't know if the pace was too fast. But with Chung and the weight off, we'll see if that makes a difference. He draws post 3, so he'll probably be out there and dare everyone to see if they can catch him. So race 7, going to be 1, 5, and 6. Race 8, going to go 1,200 meters, 6 furlongs. This is a class 3, 60 to 80. Number 2, Super Wind Dragon, probably go off the favorite. Vincent Ho riding for Chris So. Big win last time on the all-weather against this class level. Picked up 9 pounds off that win. So the handicap in the Palmer was very impressed with that win. Usually you pick up 5 or 6 pounds. He picked up 9, winning by 2.5 lengths. But draws well, draws the rail, can save ground. Looks like he can at least run mid-pack, see if he can find any room in the stretch. The other horses we're going to use are number 5, Rev Parisian, Jerry Chow riding for Pierre Ming. Showed speed, and then just another one that just collapsed in the stretch, but at least speed on the all-weather is the way to go. This is his all-weather debut, so those races were on turf at Sha Tin. Now he makes his all-weather debut with that kind of speed. Just have to throw him in. And another one we'll throw in is number 9, California Veins. Tony Cruz, Zach Purton, they're like already 5-7 at the meet, and horses in great form. 1, 2, 2 back. Tony went back to Angus Chung last time out and didn't run bad. Now back on the all weather with Zach Purton. He was 7-1 in the early betting. So race 8, second leg, we're going to go 2, 5, and 9. And then the finale is another class 3, but this one going 2 turns. So the 2 and 3, I'm just going to throw out because they drew post 10 and post 13. And I'm going to go with number 6, Handsome 12. Probably will be the favorite with Zach Purton and Benno Young. Good win last time out, rallying from off the pace. This one won, Steve, but only picked up 6 pounds off that win, that horse I just mentioned. Picked up 9 because he only won by half a length. But Zach is a cagey enough rider to win and then kind of like shut it down, so he doesn't want to win by 5. Did you see that horse at Parks the other day won by 34 and 3/4 lengths? I just happened to have it on the wet track, and it was Jose Gomez. And he put this horse on the lead and just kept widening and widening and widening. It was just insane. That just popped in my head. So number 6, Handsome 12, Zach Purton. Number 8, this is a price, Amazing Teens. Last two times were just okay, but has a really good experience record on the all-weather track. 3 wins. Looks like it's coming around. This is second start off the layoff. Was in decent form last year, running on the all-weather. So we'll throw in Amazing Teens, John Sides and Alexi Bedell, getting in with 121 and drawing post 2. So that's important. And third, we'll go with another long shot, number 10, True Legend. This one gets Angus Chung, so he's only trying to carry 111 pounds. He draws the rail. He showed high speed, 2 back, back in June. His return to the races was October 9th. Another one who led to the stretch and then kind of fell apart. He was bumped around. I don't know, he fell apart, and now he's back and he with the race under his belt and Chung bat with 111 pounds and the rail. I think he could be dangerous. So, where did my pad go? Here it is. Race 7, first leg, 1, 5, 6. Race 8, second leg, 2, 5, 9. And race 9, third leg, 6, 8, and 10. So the value pretty much in race 9, where we have a favorite, but we have 2 pretty nice price horses in there.
Nice. 3 by 3 by 3. And we're doing this for how many multiple?
probably $4. $108.
Very good.
Anyway, one thing, Steve, with the seventh race, and I these are the early odds, and I don't know what they're going to be when we, well, actually, the odds should be up by now. But But there were two horses at single digit, and everybody else was at double digits, but they were 15, 12, 14, 12, 17, 16. So what struck me was, this is not the race to buy. This is not the all race, because you're liable to buy it and spend, 13 horses, you're spending $26 for every $2 increment, and then having a chance of a 12-to-1 coming in, and all you're doing is breaking even on it. So I thought of just signaling the 5 and the 6, who were the only ones at single digits in the early betting. I did throw the 1 and only because of Angus Chung, but it was something that when you look at a market, and this market had two horses, but then everyone else kind of spread out pretty evenly, and that told me that the two horses were really stick out. So we'll see.
1-5-6 with 2-5-9 with 6-8-10 for Dick in this shot 10 morning. And I just retweeted our friend Brian Cheggers from Down Under, who provides a number of form to win snapshots. He's only got one interest today, and which is unusual. Usually he's swinging. I never know what crazy venue he's gonna go after in Australia. But he likes a couple of horses in that nightcap, Dick, that are a little different, including Ultra Express, who's going to be a price, as you know, some as a value play. But the 8, he's on board with. Not the 8. It's the 5. Right. Ultra Express is the 5. The form to win snapshot. We pull it back up. Is the 5. And I'm just looking. The 8 and the 10 are the second and or the third and fourth choices on form to win.
Yeah, the 5, he had a turf prep race for this. So if you just look at it as a prep, you don't mind him being beat 10 lengths. And now he's back into the surface that he probably prefers. Draws well, and Lyle Hewitson's had a real good meet so far.
Now, and he also, I'm just looking, he likes that 2, Form to Win likes the 2, Super Wind Dragon in that 8th race, and he didn't express a 7th race preference, though. So there you go. There's a little Form to Win to contribute to the conversation. All right, we are 3 minutes to post, so let me get the video up and ready to roll. As they looks like they're making their way to the all weather surface. Excuse me, Dick. this thing will just not completely go away. Prices 6 is still even money. The 5 Turbo Power 9-2 and 12-1 on the 1 Infinite Power. All right, a couple of minutes to post, and those are just looking at Jenny's paddock picks. She's on board with you as well. She's also got an interest in Green Laser, the 10, but. 6 with the 5-1. 6-5, universal appeal, looks like, as they run through the pundit opinions.
And Jenny just does an awesome job, because
she's sharp.
If you just listen to her every race day, and follow her. It's not that you're following her picks. You really want her first impression of the horse when they come out and walk by. Because she knows what the horse looked like 2-3 weeks ago. But she's seeing changes, improvements. you got to be very nice when you don't see an improvement. You know, you kind of have to couch your terminology and stuff. She's just terrific at what she does, and her eye for the horses is just excellent.
We're at a minute. All right, so we're really done. I don't want to launch into too many other things. I didn't talk much yet about Breeders' Cup news, but I did retweet Mike Welch, who earlier this morning watched Flightline over the wet track at Canelands, that he was very adept. And an interesting side note from Mike was that Flightline had never seen a wet track before. So that was that might be a little revealing. And he said he certainly looked more than comfortable. Yesterday, we should know, too, of course, that Jackie's Warrior and Steve Vasmussen had told you that Jackie's Warrior was going to, on Monday, he told us he was going to work Tuesday, and he drilled sharply where he'll go favored, of course, and heavily favored in the sprint. We will have our pre-entry fields at noon, between noon and probably 12:45. They will lay out the 14 races. Dick, what's your arrangements for analysis for next week?
None.
Well, then we're going to co-opt you right here.
Yeah, what I did something for you last year, and I remember saying, but I'll give you a horse. Love's Only You, Lock It Today. So she paid $10 from Japan.
Look at you.
Oh, yeah. I'll red board to the day I die.
That is true. We've got our winning companion.
Pick a race. Pick whatever you want, and I'll do it for you.
All right.
When I'm on next Wednesday. Whenever. I don't even know when the Breeders' Cup is, Steve, to be honest with you. So I'm kind of lost.
It's a week from Friday and Saturday.
All right.
Well, at least Presque Isle, at least your Presque Isle responsibilities will be in the rearview mirror. By the time by the time next week rolls around.
Well, and I'm usually early with my picks, and Thursday night I hit two deer on Route 67, not one, two.
Oh, wait a minute. Two that were in the road together, or first you hit one and then hit another one.
And now two small ones in the road together.
Oh.
Luckily, we're okay. $11,000 in damage. Car's out for 30 days, and the collision place told me I was the 11th person in the last 2 weeks to have a deer out.
They're a problem. Hold on. Here we go. We're getting ready to spring the latch in the seventh. The late pick three shots in. Here we go.
And Magic Supreme from barrier number two, Ping straight to the lead. Infinite Power is being written up alongside to have a look for the front. Magic Supreme might be going to let him go over the longer course and not take him on in a speed battle. Running third, Green Laser from Shore Joyful. Lucky Victor four wide and Mission Bravo five wide sweeping around the field. Lady first on the rail from Surrealism three wide, then Turbo Power, Yes We Can. Super Buddy is next from Viva Alara and three links to Murray's Partners. Infinite Power leads. Lucky Victor, three wide, is one away second, and Green Laser, one off the rail, third. Magic Supreme, fourth defence, and a length and a half to Mission Bravo, three wide from Shore Joyful. Lady First is on the fence, and a length away Surrealism following Mission Bravo wide. Turbo Power next from the favourite, Yes We Can. Buried on the rail in the back half of the field from Super Buddy, Viva Alar, and Murray's Partners is last. It's Infinite Power leading over Lucky Victor, who's now one off the rail, who was able to get up outside the leader but did some work to be there. Green Laser third, Magic Supreme's had a great run fourth, the inside. Hard-ridden Mission Bravo and Shore Joyful. Lady First pushing away from the rail. Yes We Can looking for some room on the rail. The leader is still Infinite Power. Lucky Victor is sticking to him, and Green Laser has run straight past the pair of them. Here comes Yes We Can from Lady First. Yes We Can's on the inside. A length and a half clear now of Lady First and Green Laser. Favourite putters. Can we win it? Yes, we can. Great ride, Zach Purton. Yes, we can. Beat Lady First and Green Laser. Then came Turbo Power. Surrealism.
Well, I guess there was a couple of moments mid-stretch of uncertainty, but then when Zach Purton said go with the I Am Invincible 7-year-old, it was all over. I'll tell you what, 6-5 looks pretty good on that horse now.
Man, he was just tons of death. Forget it.
Yeah.
I thought I had a shot with, the one just cruising along with the lightweight. I'm thinking, oh, come on, kid, keep him going. And then they all started coming at him, and then Zach just, third winner of the night for Zach. So.
Well, the runner-up here, Lady First, 23-1, and Green Laser, 10-1. So they're you're going to get a pretty good, this came up the other day when we were talking, we were recapping, was that with Joe Clancy, I think, Monday? We were recapping Maryland Million. And, there were a lot of formful winners, but there were plenty of prices underneath. Sometimes you just acknowledge the strength and likelihood of the favorite, and, you just figure out how to make money off of them. And we discussed it with Andy Serling yesterday as well. And in fact, Dick, I've got two things for you in the wake of this result. So good start for Dick, and now 3x3 in the eighth and the ninth. I want you to talk about the passing of Rock of Gibraltar, and I think there's a generation probably of players and fans that have no idea what a sensation he was at the time, and how shocking it was that he came to contest the Breeders' Cup Mile and got beat. And I've used him as a reference point where I say, if Rock of Gibraltar can lose, anybody can lose. So I want you to talk about Rock of Gibraltar, and then also I want you to talk about, Breeders' Cup betting approaches and your suggestions for how people approach things, starting today at about 1:00 when pre-entered fields will drop, and then by tonight we'll have PPs.
Well, Rock of Gibraltar had won 7 Group 1 stake races in a row. Went to the Breeders' Cup, got into all sorts of traffic, then finally got extricated and made this burst that unfortunately fell short. He had acceleration second to none. They would ride him cold. The rider would just be doing nothing, and then just a figure eight shake of the reins, and just this unbelievable burst. And I remember being at I can't remember the conference. I think it was, remember the old Simulcast conference? It used to be the end of September. And I remember being at one, and I was with, we were sitting at a table. I was with Happy Broadbent and Harry Furlong and a couple other people. And I'm like, did you see that horse the other day? And everyone had the same reaction. Like, wow. I think he won in France on that day. Just had unbelievable acceleration, was a miler, didn't go any farther than that. And I was amazed to read in the obituary, Steve, he sired 15 Group 1 stakes on it. I would have definitely had the under on that. So I was way off on that one. He, as that pure miler, that the connections are smart enough to figure out what the best condition is, and they keep him at that condition. He was just awesome, and what a shame he didn't win the Breeders' Cup Mile, because that would have really cemented some legendary status for him. So, I remember Tom, I think, said the rock is rolling once he got loose, but he just had too much to do, and the traffic, the field and traffic and tight turns and everything just did him in at Arlington, but he was a terrific horse. But that acceleration was like, wow, watch this, boom. So had a great career, and a better stud career than I gave him credit for.
I would have to, and it predates, it predates my my website. Actually, it does. It doesn't. Well, it doesn't predate the original Derby Trail group on Yahoo. For those that don't know the backstory, it started out as a Yahoo group in 2002, and then grew from there. But I don't remember if I don't think I picked Dome Driver per se, but I absolutely used Dome Driver and featured him in the analysis, and cashed Dome Driver that day. You know what's funny about that, Dick? There might be some just kind of wide-eyed exuberance. I'm sure if that race was run today, I would never have picked against the Rock of Gibraltar. I would have, said, he's a major lean. But the mile at that point in the pantheon of Breeders' Cup results, the mile had been a notoriously rough run race that had its share of oddball results, and that actually has continued. I mean, it's one of these races where horses that have been outposted and got off at exorbitant prices. What's his name at Santa Anita, the 14? Nick Tamara went to town. A lot of people went to town. Paul Weiser went to town on that horse with the unusual name. What was who am I thinking of? The Euro. Dome Driver was a 20 something to one, and I remember having him, and I might not have been as clever these days, for some reason. I would have had a lot more respect for Rock of Gibraltar's accomplishments coming in.
Well, I tend to overrate post position. That you look at the history of the Breeders' Cup and how many horses have won from post 13 and 14 going two turns on either surface. But one year, Lur had won the first Breeders' Cup mile.
Caracanti, by the way. Caracanta.
Okay, yes. And he's like $70-something. And the second year, Lur draws post 14. And I was on the phone with someone.
That's right.
A day or two after the draw. And I said, well, now I really like Lur. And they're like, what? Why? I said, because now Mike has to go. He has no choice. There's no chance of Mike getting fancy, taken back, getting stuck in traffic, none of that. He's going to go. Gate's going to open. He has no chance. He has to go. Only choice is to go. And he did. So he was the best horse, so it didn't really matter where he broke from. But it was very cogent analysis on my part.
I was a huge Lur fan, and I was there that day. That was my first trip to Santa Anita.
Was that one of the really hot days? Was that one Santa Ana, when Santa Ana wind was blowing? And I remember there was a couple of Breeders'
Cups. I don't remember the heat. I'm pretty sure though that was the year of the fire of the mountain on fire, right?
Yeah, I think so.
The ash.
Usually it's pretty.
Yeah.
Usually it's pretty hot when that happens. But yeah. About the only yeah. Downside of holding it at Santa Anita.
And even then, there's no downside. Dick, just a couple of minutes before we break, and I'll bring Sid in. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillendale. What do you suggest? How do you tell people, especially fairly new players, neophyte fledgling type players, how should they approach what is a very taxing period of time here, and potentially overwhelming when you're trying to familiarize yourself with about 165 horses between now and draw day Monday. Then you adjust your thinking once you know where everybody lines up. But we've got the opportunity over the next basically 5 days to just get familiar with the fields and get an understanding of the parameters.
Well, have an opinion and stick to it. I think the betting menu is almost too much. And if you like a horse, you can still lose money because you can really screw it up by starting out the pick four in this race instead of that race and all that. So, me, it's pretty simple. I'm a win better. My goal was on any day. Last night I bet Isaiah Stewart over 9.5 rebounds, which I do a lot. And the Washington Wizards just stink on the boards. So sure enough, he had 10 rebounds. I cash. So the goal is to make money. The goal is not to take down the house and everything else. So go to the Breeders' Cup. Lots of opportunities. So lots of opportunities to make money. But if you like a horse and the odds are right, make sure you bet it to win. I don't want to hear about you had 3 out of 4, and you had this, and you had that. You didn't make money. So go in with the goal of making money. That'll keep you on the between the rails. And I'm not the biggest gimmick player there is. I don't like 25% takeouts and things like that. So I like the pick fives with the low takeouts. So I definitely do them, and the rest is just shopping for value on win prices and then protecting them with exactives. Now, you can give a lot of money back because there's a lot of exactive possibilities with 14 horse fields, but that's just what I look for. Play some pick fives with the low takeout, have some win bets on horses that I like, straight exactives if I like them a lot, and then protect them if they're good prices with the horses on top and my horse that I like that might be 7, 8, 10 to 1 underneath an exactive. That's basically it. I'm not smart enough or clever enough to come up with some all-encompassing game plan to take down the Breeders' Cup, or I don't even try. My goal on anything I do is to make money. Now, that said, the advantage I have is I'm not behind, so I'm not chasing. If you're behind for the year and you go into the Breeders' Cup first week in November and you're chasing off a bad 10 months, well, you might as well send me the money because you don't have much of a chance. But if you manage your money and if you stay with the goal of making money, then you can make money.
Nice. All right. Well, Dick, that's a good start, and we'll start to dig in, and we'll talk next week. I'll talk to you off air, and we'll come up with a game plan.
Let me know which races you want me to focus on.
You have it. And by the way, there was the other day at Parks. I couldn't remember the name. Majestic Creed. Majestic Creed. This was a John Service trainee for owner Ben Robbins,
yes.
A Jimmy Creed filly, and she absolutely freaked on the sloppy sealed track, wins by 34 3/4 lengths under Gomez, as mentioned, whose tendency is to go like any bug. This horse was claimed away. Bobby Hawthorne grabbed Majestic Creed for owner Cheryl Rickards. And as it happens, this was a 25 maiden claimer for two-year-olds, and this filly got a 74 buyer.
I don't know what the other ones got. That couldn't have been too good.
Yeah, they got an 8. There was an 8. There was a 6. A 2, a 0, and a -4. And I also pulled up, here is Lure from that great second Breeders' Cup mile win in 1993. Smith was second at first call behind Ski Paradise, and they more or less went 1-2 around the track. Four Stars All-Star actually was sparring. This ended up being a little bit of a merry-go-round race despite sharp times. 22-3, 45-4, 109-2. And how about stopping the clock in 133.58, the incredible war.
Yeah.
Wide early, well handled. Frankel is fourth with Toussaud, the enigmatic and difficult Toussaud. If you ever want to listen to on the At the Races Facebook page is the conversation with Bobby when Toussaud passed, and Bobby had not heard. Bobby says they called me last night that she was in bad shape. That's what it was, that she was in bad shape, but I let him know that she had died. And he told some wonderful Toussaud stories about her, about working her one of the first times, and her basically stopping like a donkey and digging her front feet in, mid-work. Barathea was fifth. Big Stone with Pat Ettering. Johan Quatz. Paradise Creek was eighth. Wolfhound, Letch, Cottrell, and Buckhart. Buckhart came up yesterday with Andy. Of all the crazy horses to come up 2 days in a row, Buckhart. How funny is that? Well, because of war. Because they ran together. They ran against each other at Keeneland.
If you're a fan of a beautiful game, Johan Cruyff is one of the all-time greatest. Some Dutch player that played for Barcelona and kind of started a lot of the Barcelona style of football. So, Johan Cruyff.
Look at you. Look at our man, Dick. Dick with the footy.
Yes.
Dick Powell, everybody. Hockey Club, HKJC Racing. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Sid Fernando continues the wacky hijinks at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should...